Last week we began a discussion about writing notes, and I think we can take this discussion to another level. There is a basic need that all of us have, and women have it even more than men, and that is the need for appreciation. We walk around with a yearning to feel appreciated. We walk around with a frustration that the world doesn't realize how great I am. We don't say it that way. It's uncomfortable. Come on, I'm going to tell everyone. But at the end of the day, we definitely have an element of that in our personality. And to some degree, we look to resolve that issue in marriage. Meaning a person hopes within his marriage to find a relationship where there will be acceptance and appreciation to that degree, where a person will feel comfortable with themselves because they'll have met their mate who appreciates them, who thinks the world of them. Now, the way life would have it, this doesn't happen naturally. There's a saying that says, behind every great man is a woman rolling her eyes. So there is that tendency of partners to look at one another and think, they think he or she is great. I know what they're really like. I know when they have indigestion. I know when they get up late. I know all their weaknesses. You know, I have a friend who frequented with a certain prime minister, and he once told me, he is such a slob, you know. They work on him for an hour and a half to get him to look so nice on TV, because the rest of the week, the guy doesn't shower, the guy doesn't shave, he doesn't brush his teeth in the morning, he comes into meetings, he looks like such a bum, he looks like a wreck, everyone knows it. When he has a public appearance, they stand there and they work on him to get him to look decent. And you know, I could never look at that prime minister the same way. Ever since I heard that, it was like, I looked and I was like, he doesn't shave or brush his teeth in the morning before he meets people? So suddenly, even as I look at him, you know, I see a picture, it's like, you know. But there's this feeling where if I know the weaknesses of someone else, then I have a hard time respecting or appreciating them. And this is, in fact, a very, very serious problem. Meaning, if we can overcome this, we'll resolve a lot. So that means if we're willing to look differently, if we're willing to take the time to see what's good in the other person. Guys, forgive me one second, I'm sorry. The truth is that we can decide how we view a person. We can make a conscious decision. And it's not only about how we decide to view someone, it's also about what we express to the person or about the person. People sometimes make the mistake that when they're talking to a friend or when they're talking to their parents or when they're talking between the guys, so everyone kvetches about their wife or how difficult it is to be married. You know what it's like when you walk through the door and your wife looks at you and says, honey, how was your day? You know what she's about to tell you, right? Oh. So guys can sit there and compare notes. What does that breed within us? If a person is focused on speaking positively about their spouse, so then that helps a person view their spouse positively. The way we talk very often fashions the way we think. The more we focus on speaking positive, the more positive we will be. You ever noticed there are people who say, I hate and I hate and I hate and I hate? and I can't stand and I dislike and it's been so hard. Now, the more they speak that way, the more they feel that way, the more they feel that way, the more they can say it. It's a cycle. It's a snowball. And we can enter that cycle very easily. I sat with a couple the other day, and they're married somewhere between, okay, we'll say 17 years, whatever. And the wife says, in 17 years, I haven't had a day that turned out right. And I looked at her, at first I thought she was like, I thought she was joking. She seemed happily married. I didn't know what to say. I said, 17 years, you haven't had a day that's turned out right. That's very interesting. I felt bad for her. Because if that's her perspective, so then you understand this is going to snowball. I would question, did she have a day that turned out right beforehand? You know, life never turns out exactly the way we'd want it. You stand in line, so you're upset you're standing in line. You finally get your pizza, then you discover you're getting heartburn. You wanted to eat three slices, you only got two. You got the third, now you have a stomachache. You know, everything has its little nuances of annoyances. It's a way of life. You look out at the sky and you say, I hope it's going to snow. Then it snows and suddenly you're cold. Wait a second. But you wanted the snow. But there's snow on the sidewalk. And it's hard to walk. I wanted snow and there shouldn't be snow on the sidewalk. You ask for it to snow and then you're upset it snows. Then the next time it snows, it melts right away. And you say, what kind of snow is that? It melted right away. Look at that. As human beings, we keep having things not exactly the way we'd want them. Or more accurately, we keep wanting things not exactly the way they are. Whatever we get, we'd like it to be slightly different. I'll tell you an interesting story. I had it with, I think, every one of our kids. It makes me wonder if it's something in our personality we're teaching our kids, or every kid does this. But I think it sheds some light on the human condition. So kids reach an age where they want to tell you no. So you prepare a kid a sandwich, and you're getting ready to leave for school, and the kid asks you, but what'd you put in my sandwich? And you say, peanut butter. And the kid goes, I don't want peanut butter. So you say, okay, what would you like? And the kid says, I want cottage cheese. You say, fine, I'll make you cottage cheese. Okay. That night, you decide you're going to be smarter. So you ask the kid, what would you like for lunch tomorrow? So the kid says, peanut butter. So you make peanut butter, but you didn't win because the next morning you're about to leave and the kid says, but what do I have for lunch? And you say, I asked you yesterday and you said peanut butter, so I made peanut butter. And the kid says, but I don't want peanut butter. So either you say, well, you should have said that last night. I'm sorry, I already made you the sandwich. Or you make him the cottage cheese sandwich. But you start getting annoyed and you ask yourself, okay, what am I going to do now? So whatever you do, it's a lose-lose situation. You send the kid with the peanut butter sandwich, you're upset. You wanted the kid to be happy. You send the kid with the cottage cheese sandwich, you're upset. You didn't exactly have time to make that sandwich. And what are you going to do with the peanut butter sandwich now, right? So it's like a lose-lose situation. So if you're Netanel Frankenthal, then the next morning, you prepare a sandwich, right? And the kid asks you, but what'd you prepare for lunch? And you say, what do you want for lunch? So the kid says,
I want marshmallow and jam. I will get it for you, no problem.
Okay, so the kid says peanut butter, and you say, okay, that's what I made you. So the kid looks at you and says, no, I meant cottage cheese. And you say, well, that's what I made you. And then the kid looks at you and says, well, which one did you make me? And you look at the kid and you say, well, which one did you want? And then the kid stands, sits there stumped. And you look at them and they look at you and you say, you know, I get the feeling that you're just interested in saying no to whatever I said yes. So now you tell me what you want and then we'll see which one I have. At least this way I'll win 50% of the time. Now, if I didn't have to go through this with each of my kids, I'd say, you know, one of the kids is a hard nut to crack, right? No, but I think every single one of them went through this stage where they're like, whatever I'm going to make him, no, I wanted something else. But are we so different? Are we, when we deal with life, how many times, I'll tell you a scary, you know, very interesting concept. There's a friend of mine who's a gabbai at this huge shul. So the shul has a budget, I don't know of how many million dollars a year. And they decide they're going to switch the seats. So they raise funds, right, a special drive. They're buying new chairs for the shul. Okay, so they put together the $500,000 it's going to cost to get new seats for this shul. Now, who's going to decide what seats you get for the shul? So a shul that has a budget of a few million dollars a year has to have gabbaim who know what they're doing with a few million dollars a year, right? So they have very smart gabbaim. So what do? The gabbaim decide which three types of seats are acceptable to them. Then they come to the crowd and they say, choose from these. We're going to have a vote which seats the crowd wants. And then the crowd votes and everyone's happy. You know, it was a majority opinion. But was it? You know, they went to the store. The gabbaim saw what they liked. They boiled it down. They knew they had to come to the crowd and let the crowd feel like they were choosing. So they boiled it down to three. And of those three, they really didn't care. So they nixed all the ones that maybe someone else would choose. And then ostensibly, they came with a reasonable offer. You can't have everyone go through every type of seat, right? But you understand what they understood. What they understand, these gabbaim, is that people don't really have to decide. People have to feel like they're deciding. Give them a choice. So if you've decided the shul color should be dark, so you bring them maroon or brown, and you say, choose. You don't tell them there was white and gray and off-white and beige. You know, I gave you a choice. What do you want from me? So the gabbaim, boil it down. If you decide that this type of seat with a spring that springs back is going to make too much noise and it's dangerous for the kids, you nixed it. You decide that the one that has a cubby for every participant is going to be too much cleanup, it's going to cost you too much, you nix it. You know, you have a million things to decide from. It's okay, you decide which three fit your criterion. But everyone had a choice, everyone's happy. So that's the way we are. And then you walk into marriage. And you have to ask yourself, do I have a choice? Meaning, I'm married to this person for life? And some people make the fatal error of entering marriage with the thought, worst comes to worst, you know, there's that little contract called divorce. Not such a big deal, right? Wrong. You got to enter it with the approach, this is for life. And then you wake up the morning after, and the morning after that, and you find yourself after your first squabble, and things start getting tiring and tedious. And we won't mention the difficulties of age and the fact that God continues creating pretty people out there, and if a person is still looking, so then they're going to find it very hard to find their wife more attractive than everyone else, because at the end of the day, there are a lot of attractive people out there. If you're going to be looking, so then there's no way a person can compete with every single model that's going to walk out there. This is for life? This is going to be forced down my throat for the rest of my life? I'm going to wake up every morning looking at this person and they won't be looking any better as the years go by? This person that has the annoying habit that. So it's very easy to get into that rut, to feel like I'm forced. I have no way out. How am I going to make this work? Stop. What are we looking at? If we can focus on the positive, if we can speak positive, we can appreciate. We can feel how lucky we are to be married to this person. One of the things that happens over time is that we forget how lucky we are. We're spoiled. We take what we have for granted. And then the little things annoy us. And we can make an issue over the little things. And they can be a big deal. But are they really a big deal? It's a much bigger deal to have a partner for life. But you have to be prepared for it. And that commitment, especially to men, can be very scary. And here we come full circle. We said we enter marriage with a need, with a desire to be appreciated. When we can show appreciation to the party we're married to, when we can focus on the positive and repeatedly show appreciation, we are actually shielding ourselves from this calamity. We're shielding ourselves because we're renewing the spirit of excitement over our partner. And then we will consistently be happy with our marriage. If I can continuously show appreciation, then I continuously remind myself how lucky I am. What happens is at some point you get tired. You already said it. How many times can you say it? You get tired, you stop expressing the appreciation. You stop expressing the appreciation, it starts getting annoying. So this idea of expressing appreciation is not only good for your wives, it's also good for us. Because we need it. We need to keep reminding ourselves how lucky we are. It's like the husband who comes home to the wife and says, "You know, you're the most amazing person in the world. I'm so happy I married you. You're so phenomenal." And he gives her this whole long speech. And when he's done, she says, "I'm happy you reminded yourself of all that." Now, there's truth to that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes we say things, us men, and we don't sound so convincing. We're not so good at it. We say these things, and it doesn't sound real. And we've come to this class, so we know we have to say it. So we come out there, and after we've worked on ourselves real hard, we come out and we say it. And when we're done, she says, "Now that sounded believable." Right. And then you say, "Dunce, why did I tell you that for? You know how hard it was to say all that? And now you tell me that? Wait a second. Say it again. Say it again tomorrow." Le'at le'at. She'll become accustomed to hearing it, you'll become accustomed to saying it, and you'll have a beautiful marriage. It's true. You and she, most people are unaccustomed to direct appreciation. I remember one of my teachers would very often express appreciation. He would say things like, "That's so nice of you. It's so special that you thought of me and that you did that." And I was so unaccustomed to hearing it, I'd stand there looking at him like, "Huh? Is he for real?" And then his mother passed away, and they were coming to bury her here. I was studying in yeshiva here, and he had a daughter here. So we were trying to make arrangements for the funeral, and I called up the daughter to ensure that her father had everything he needed taken care of. I was single, she was single. Okay, so I hear in the phone the same type of thing. "Wow, that's so special. You thought of that and you're so considerate." And I'm thinking she just lost her grandmother. Okay, I met her once and I knew not for me. Okay, but that trait was a part of the family. It was real. That capacity to show appreciation. Our generation, we're unaccustomed to it. We look at it as fake, but you can become accustomed to it, and it's important. And at the end of the day, we all need it. And in truth, we're all looking for it when we get married. So we have to think of how can I give it before we think of how can I receive it. And that takes practice. And as you do it, then over time, your wives will learn to do it too. That means that if you spend 3 years showing appreciation, then Bezrat Hashem, in the fourth year, she'll start showing you appreciation. It's a long time, right? But things take time. I wasn't exaggerating when I said those numbers. You got to have patience. Things take time. Yes?
Did you say that was the trait, that trait specifically made you feel not like she was the one?
No. For that trait, I was interested. Okay. But then on the way to the Levaya, I heard the way she spoke and stuff, and I said, "No, And 3 months later, her father called me up and tried to set up the shidduch. And I said, I don't think there's a point. And he said, why? And I said, because I heard how she has a very strong personality. And I think that's wonderful, but I don't think I'll be able to manage with it. And he was shocked, but to me it was like obvious the way she ran everything from the Levaya to the flight to everything. You could see that she was ready to be in control of the world. So that's fine, but I was scared of that. So there's a famous story about, this story repeated itself throughout history where there were rabbis who wanted their students to marry their daughters. So there were all kinds of comments that were made, but like the standard line is, Rebbe, I love you and I love your Torah. I'm married to your Torah, but not your daughter. there are all kinds of stories that run the same course. Yeah, so say there. Tov, I shouldn't be telling you guys this. I have a daughter, but okay.